I'm still really powerfully struck by what we just looked at there about the tsunami. So I suppose a couple of things I'd just like you to bear in mind is that when we're faced with things like that, there isn't anything we can do about it. So when you face your personal tsunami, whether that challenge you're facing in your family or your health, or you're those people in Indonesia, there isn't anything that we can do about it. But I think that's why this morning's message is probably really helpful and important for us. It's about us remembering that it doesn't depend on us. It doesn't depend on us to fix things. We can't fix things personally. We can't fix things for our friends. We can't fix things for those families in Belarus or Indonesia. But God can. But God can. That song that Ben taught us was about He fights our battles. God fights our battles. The line of Judah fights your battles. And that's what we're focusing on this morning. So, I don't know. So I'm still really shaken by seeing those pictures and trying to understand what it's like to be in that situation. But I also stand here and know that I know a God that does change things. So it's all about rest. You will need a Bible. In fact, an app might actually help you, because the first thing I'm going to do is sweep really quickly through the whole Bible. So it's really tough when you're given a topic. The topic I was given was rest. And you start looking at rest, and rest, it turns out, is core to what the Bible teaches us. God has a promise for his people, and his promise is to bring us rest. So wherever you look in the Bible, you will find mention of rest in all its different forms. What's quite nice for us is that rest is a daily gift, it's a weekly blessing, and it's an eternal destination for us. So this idea of rest that we're learning about this morning is something immediate for us now. It's something weekly that we do, and it's something forever. So the third part will then be about how do we enter that rest. And it will be reminding us how we come to be at rest with God. Rest is something the world is searching for and finding really difficult to get hold of. There are people around us that are doing everything they can to get peace, and they're not finding it. But we have a hope that we can enter that rest. And finally, it's kind of a verse that comes up, strive to enter that rest. Actually, it can be a battle. It can be hard to get rest. If you've ever been desperate for sleep, desperate for peace, peace of mind or peace in your body, you know that can be a battle. So the last little bit we'll look about is battling unbelief. So although it's about rest, we have to work quite hard for the first 10, 15 minutes. So if you've got a Bible, Genesis chapter 2 is a great place to start. An illustration, the deck chair. I didn't plan this, but when I arrived at church, there were 6 deck chairs just lying there like they do when you come to church. What I love about deck chairs, though, is though when you sit in a deck chair, there's very little you can actually do. If you've ever tried to even eat your lunch in a deck chair, when you're leaning back and you're not swallowing properly, deck chairs are a brilliant symbol of what it means to enter rest. You can't do anything. All you can really do is sit, maybe read, listen to music, enjoy the warmth of the sun. So deck chairs are a beautiful picture of what it means to rest. We're going to start in Genesis. So these are from the ESV version. So again, if you've got an app, you might want to switch to that. I've got the key verses up here for us to follow. But we're starting at Genesis 2 for this quick sweep through the Bible about what we can learn about rest. So you've had 6 days, God working very hard, saying stuff, amazing things happening. You get to day 7, and it says this, "Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the host of them. And on the 7th day, God finished his work that he had done, and he rested on the 7th day from all his work that he had done. So God blessed the 7th day and made it holy, because on it God rested from all his work that he had done in creation." So there, rest had a couple of things for God. Rest, this word Sabbath, it means the same thing. Sabbath, rest, is ceasing. It's stopping, stopping from work. God stopped from his work of creation. God entered this 7th day. And what's really interesting here is what's missing from the end of this. The other 6 days all end with a little phrase, "There was morning, there was evening." And the day ends. But this 7th day doesn't seem to end. When you read it in Genesis, there's not an end to the 7th day. There's no, "and it was back to work on Monday for God." It seems like God is still in this 7th day. And we'll see later on when we hear what Jesus says about the work that he's done on the Sabbath and what the writer to the Hebrews says. It feels like we're still in this day. God has finished creating, but God is still very active. God is doing the stuff of the gospel. He's doing the work of the good news to bring people back to him. So he's finished creating the earth, the heavens, all the planets, all the animals, all the vegetation, But he is now resting and he's doing his business, his work of bringing people to know him. So very early on, we get introduced to the idea of rest. So God rested in Genesis 2. Exodus. Exodus is full of instructions on how to rest. These are people, these are Israelites who are having to work very hard. They were working very hard for the Egyptians. They were taken captive and they were set to work making bricks. And the Egyptians didn't have a weekend. They would work usually for 10 days in a row for the people in Egypt making bricks. But after they came out of Egypt, God gave them some commandments. And this is one of the 10 commandments. This is number 4. And what God says to Moses is this: remember the Sabbath day, remember the rest day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter, your male servant or your female servant or your livestock or the sojourner who is within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. There's this gift. I made sure that Esther had left before I emptied one of her boxes. But sometimes you get a gift, and sometimes maybe a gift is a time and a space you've got, but we fill it with so many things. We fill it with activities, with things to do, with things to watch, with books, three places to go. But God's gift really was just the absence of work. It was having an empty gift to take something away. And I think often we spend so much time adding things into our lives. I don't know what your Sunday is that you've got planned. I don't know what your evenings are like when you come home from work or you've collected children from school. But God gives this gift to his people. And it's not just for his people. It's for everyone around them. It's as an example to the sojourner, the people that are traveling through, to their servants. Sabbath is a gift, not just for Christians, but for people around us. There's a few more passages in Exodus. There's one in Exodus 23, there's one in Exodus 31. It goes into Leviticus as well. But there's three things that we learn about why God gives us this gift. First of all, Exodus 23, it talks about refreshment, being refreshed. Rest is a chance to be refreshed. The other idea is that it's about remembering. It's a chance to remember what God's done. I'm sure when God entered day 7, he looked back at what he'd done. He looked back at day 1, day 2, day 3, day 4, day 5, 6, and he was pleased. So Sabbath isn't just a day to stop working, to be refreshed. It's to remember. And the word that gets used in Exodus 31 is that you may know that I, the Lord, sanctify you. And sanctification is that process of being washed, of being made clean again. So even in Exodus, it talks about the gospel. It talks about Sabbath being a time to be sanctified. Leviticus 23:3 says, 6 days shall work be done, but on the seventh day is a Sabbath of solemn rest, a holy, and I love this word, convocation, which is a day of coming together. So for the Israelites, it wasn't just stopping. It wasn't just refreshment. It wasn't just remembering. It was coming together to do that as a people of God. And again, we'll see later on as we go through the Bible how important it is. So God rested as an example to us. But Sabbath comes all the way through the law as being a gift to stop working, something they didn't have available to them in Egypt, something they found difficult to do, and it was for refreshment. It was to remember that the Lord sanctifies them, and it was to come together to remember those things. So that's the law, and here's the map. Great to know we've got this, isn't it? So we've got Egypt on this side. So this is where they were used as slaves. This is where they were baking bricks, had the straw taken away from them, so they had to collect their own straw to make their bricks with. But God freed them. God brought them across the Red Sea. They took this journey. And they end up at a place here, Meribah. And at this point, they get the chance to go and see the promised land. God gave them a promise, a land of milk and honey, a place where they could grow their crops, they could establish their families, they could be safe. When they got here, they sent some spies. They sent 12 spies. And of those 12 spies, 10 of them came back and said, "You don't want to go there. It's scary. The people are tall." So tall people can be scary, apparently. So don't go that way. 2 of the spies, Caleb and Joshua, saw what was good about it. But when they came back, the people started grumbling. They were saying, where is God? God can't do that. God brought us to this desert. We're lost. And the Israelites forgot who God was. And they struggled with believing. So these spies, they were there for 40 days. And for every one of those days, God said, I'm going to keep you in the desert for another year. There was a real key connection between the time that the spies spent seeing God's promises and then coming back and not believing it. These people had been rescued from Egypt. They had been saved through the desert. They had columns of fire. They had columns of cloud to follow. They had manna from heaven. But they still were disobedient. They had seen the promises. And I think what I find was quite terrifying is that for us as Christians, we've seen those promises. We've seen what the promised land looks like. But we can still be tempted to quarrel and to question God. So these places, Massa means testing, Meribah means tears. Because of the quarreling, the people of Israel, they tested the Lord by saying, is the Lord among us or not? There is a real challenge to us that is met by rest about not believing. Forgetting to believe. Forgetting what God has done. So you see this story of the Exodus, and you see people who knew God, knew his promises, forgetting them. Forgetting the purpose of the Sabbath. So Sabbath was a commandment to refresh us, to remind us together that God sanctifies us. But because of disobedience in not trusting God's promises, not everyone entered into the rest of the promised land. So they'd been rescued, but they didn't enter the rest. And again, sometimes for us, we know that God is a God of love and of peace and wants good things for us, but we struggle to get that rest. We struggle to receive the rest he's promised. And Jesus in Hebrews is going to tell us why that might be. And they go on to tell us what we can do about it. So Jesus on the Sabbath was going through the cornfields. And as he and his disciples made their way, the disciples began to pluck ears of corn. The Pharisees, who were the people that were teaching the law, were saying to him, look, why are they doing what is not lawful on the Sabbath? And he said to them, have you never read what David, another Old Testament story, David, the king, when he was in need and hungry, he and those who were with him entered the house of God in the time of Abiathar, the high priest, and ate the bread of the presence, which is not lawful for any but the priest to eat, and also gave it to those who were with him. And he said to them, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath. David and his men who were being hunted, they were on the run, they fled to the temple and they ate this bread that had been given as a symbol of God's presence with the people. But what Jesus says is, the Sabbath is made for you. The Sabbath isn't about laws. It's not about having to do this or not do that. At this point, the Israelites had rules about how far you could walk. And you still see it in Israel today. You can visit kibbutz, which are very religious Jewish communities, and there'll be a wire. And that wire around their home is how far you're allowed to walk on a Sabbath day and come back. You weren't allowed to harvest. You weren't allowed to grind wheat. You weren't allowed to look in the mirror in case you saw a grey hair and then plucked it out, because that would be harvesting. So all of these things that men have added to God's gift are crazy. But how often do we do that? God gives you a gift of stopping, of ceasing from labor, but how much of it do we add to it? At this point, the Pharisees had added law after law after law after law on top of something that was an amazing gift. So Jesus reminds us, the Sabbath is for you, it's for man, it's so you can be refreshed, you can be reminded, it's so you can be together with other Christians. Man was not made for the Sabbath. So it is this beautiful gift, this gift of rest, which God has given to us. Another thing that Jesus says, come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. It's as simple as coming to Jesus. Jesus is the person that gives us rest. It's not the law. It's not all those regulations about follow these 10 commandments, follow all these things. It's Jesus that gives us rest. That was used as an example to us. It's used for really good guidance for us. It's good that you follow the Ten Commandments. But it's Jesus that gives you rest. It's having belief in the promises of God. The mistake the Israelites made is they didn't believe God's promises. But Jesus is the one that gives us rest. And what's great about today and every Sunday is you can come back to Jesus and you can thank him for that rest. You can take time, like we did praying silently, to receive that rest. The thing I want to send to the people in Indonesia is rest. The things I want to see to those families struggling in Eastern Europe is rest. And it's Jesus that will get them there. The shoeboxes are brilliant because that will introduce them to a God that loves to give good gifts. It will introduce them to Christians that care for them, but it's rest that they need. And this is why rest, I think, is one of the things at the heart of the gospel. God wants to bring us rest. Jesus is the key to that. So far we've done Genesis, Exodus, Jesus. Jesus gives us rest. Sabbath is a gift for you. But that's all very easy. It's great for me to say, God's got a gift of rest for you. But why do we find that so difficult? I've just taken out two sections of this quite long passage from Hebrews. This is a letter in the New Testament written to people that knew those stories. So they knew the stories of David and Abitha. They knew the Psalms that get quoted on the left here. This is Psalm 95. This Psalm that gets quoted in the New Testament is referring back to Genesis. So again, the encouragement is, it's good to know all these stories, because when you read the New Testament, they help us understand a lot of what Jesus has come to bring. So it says, therefore, as the Holy Spirit says, and it quotes Psalm 95, today, if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts as in the rebellion on the day of testing, which was the name of that place, Massah, the day of testing in the wilderness, where your fathers put me to the test and saw my works for 40 years. Therefore, I, God, was provoked with that generation and said, they always go astray in their heart and have not known my ways. And you can feel the heartbreak of a father that loves his people. A heartbroken father who sees people turning away from him. I swore in my wrath, they shall not enter my rest. Take care, brothers. And this is in the New Testament. This is after Jesus. The writer to the Hebrews says, take care, brothers, lest there be in any of you an evil, unbelieving heart, leading you to fall away from the living God. There is a risk. This idea of taking care. It means literally watch out. That word in the Bible, take care. Watch out for this risk that you might fall away from the living God. But, and this is the antidote, and this is why church is brilliant, and this is why WhatsApp, now I have it installed, is great. Because every day I receive prayers and encouragement, people get to call out for help. Every day, exhort one another. As long as it is called today, that none of you may be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. And to whom did he swear that they would not enter his rest, but to those who were disobedient? So we see they were unable to enter because of unbelief. So there's lots of phrases in there that tie together the reason that people don't get to enter rest. It's because of unbelief. The reason those Israelites, and it was everyone over the age of 20 at that point, they didn't make it into the promised land, it's because of their unbelief. Unbelief is disobedience. Not believing a God who tells you that he will care for you, he will love you, he will guide you, he'll be there for you. And this is the risk. I think what's really sad is that's a risk for me as a Christian. Sometimes I forget God's promises. Sometimes it's hard to believe them. Sometimes I'll be calling out, where are you, God? Where are you? And that happens, I think, probably to all of us at times. And this is what we're called to guard against. One way in here is to encourage each other. So I'm here to tell you that God is real, that God is for you, that God is true. The Bible says that. The songs see that. You see it in our lives. So if you're struggling with unbelief today, ask God. Ask God to help you in your unbelief, because it's the believing the promises of God that will lead you to rest. It goes on. This is the same section of the Bible. This is Hebrews 4 now. Therefore, the promise of entering his rest still stands. There is a future rest for us to look forward to. It's not just the immediate peace, it's heaven, the future rest. And this word is really powerful. I think in the NIV it just says take care, but this word is phobos. It comes from like phobia that you're familiar with. Be very afraid of failing to reach the rest. So God tells us not to be scared of people, not to be scared of principalities, not to be scared of ill health, don't be scared of death. But there are things to be scared of. We've spoken about fearing God. Fearing God because he's holy and magnificent. But also fear falling into unbelief. So then, there remains a Sabbath rest for the people of God. For whoever has entered God's rest has also rested from his works, as God did in Genesis 2 from his. Let us therefore strive, and this word is labour. So this word is labour, to work hard to enter that cessation from work, so that no one may fall by the same sort of disobedience. And it tells us why. It goes on, for the word of God is living and active, sharper than any two-edged sword, piercing to the division of soul and of spirit, of joints and of marrow, and discerning the thoughts and intentions of the heart. And no creature is hidden from his sight, but all are naked and exposed to the eyes of him to whom we must give account. So this passage tells us to be afraid of unbelief. But it tells us that the Bible is living and active. The Bible will help you. There are Christians to exhort and encourage you. There is the Bible that is living and active that will support you. But this verse here in the middle is really key. For whoever has entered God's rest has also rested from his works. The other key message here is that you just need to stop. You need to stop trying to do it for yourself. If you want to be right with God, you might be in that place, well, if I do this, if I go to church more often, if I read my Bible, if I'm kinder to my children, then I'll be okay with God. But it's not that. The gospel is when you stop trying to work at it. The gospel is when you say, God, I can't do this. I'm not good enough. I've fallen so far short of what you've called me for. Sabbath is the gospel. It's the stopping from working. Stopping from trying to do it for yourself. Even when we're struggling, we try to do more. We stay up later. If I do this, then it'll be better tomorrow. It'll be easier. But what's great about sleeping is that that's recognizing that God's active. Again, there's Psalm 127, that talks about the battle is the Lord's. We sung it as well. It's about the fact that when we're asleep, God is still active. It doesn't depend on you. So that daily sleep is a picture of letting God do the work. Coming to church on a Sunday and stopping is recognition God's doing the work. We could all be out on the streets, knocking on doors, doing good works for people, making websites to explain the gospel, to earning more money, to give to charities. But instead, we come here to stop working so we can let God do the work. We're here to pray. We're here to worship. We're here to make sure we're right with God because he is the one who is active. So the Bible tells us all these things. So the Revelation one is the fact there's no more tears. There's no more pain. Imagine a rest like that. A rest where our body doesn't ache, where we don't get colds, where we're not fearful for the people we love. The revelation rest at the end is perfect. So all through the Bible, Genesis, Exodus, Jesus, Hebrews, Revelation, it talks about Sabbath. Sabbath being something that lets us be refreshed, reminds us who God is. But Sabbath is the stopping from trying to make yourself good enough for God, because only Christ can do that. So I suppose three bits of application. The Bible is really positive about sleeping. So Jesus is a great example of sleeping. He often got up early, but he also slept. He slept during storms at the front of the boat. He also had those nights, though, when he was up praying, when he was fearful for what was happening next, where he was anxious about what was facing him. But rest as a daily gift is really important. It reminds us that God is the one that's at work, not at us. He made us out of dust. It reminds us that we're dust and God is God. So sleeping is a daily gift, a weekly blessing. God gave us those commandments to help us protect this time. And what's interesting is that the way you spend your Sunday is often a ceasing from your daily activity, your daily work, whether that's caring for a home, caring for the family, whether it's out at work earning money. But what God does in this eternal day seven is he does the things that develop his kingdom. Jesus did that. Jesus spent lots of time healing people on a Sabbath, got into lots of trouble. He'd go and heal them. He'd make mud to put in their eyes and they could see again. But Jesus spent the Sabbath doing God's work. So for us, a Sabbath, a weekly one, is to do God's work. One example might be digging someone else's garden. Doing something that helps somebody understand something, what it means to be sacrificial and to give. So maybe not spending things on our own entertainment or things on our own development, but doing God's work. So what is God's work for us on a Sabbath? Rest is the eternal good news. Rest is the idea of coming to Jesus, stopping our labour, getting rest from him. And it's the eternity of a destination, a rest, where there'll be no more tears. So rest is something that God calls us to. This is what it looks like. So the last few minutes, how do we get there? How to strive to enter that rest. And it's really funny when the Bible puts two words together. Rest is the cessation of labour. This is working very hard. The word for this in the Greek is shudad. If you ever say shudad, shudad, it means go quickly, go quickly. You can say that. So it's about being earnest, about doing things quickly, about working hard. So if rest is so amazing and rest is stopping, why do we have to work hard to rest? What is this work that we're called to do to make it possible to rest? We've had a series about walking humbly, about acting justly. We've had lots of work from Ephesians about standing, about being in a battle. There's always this tension between God doing the work, but us calling to take part in that. So this passage in Hebrews talks about working hard. And what it means, it's sometimes hard to let go of the things we do, the things we rely on. It would be hard, I think, for me to let go of my commentaries in preparing a sermon. I've got these books that I can read that tell me what the Bible meant to those people. But for me to let go of that would be an example of me just relying on God. It might be letting go of the skills you've got, of the strength he's given you, and just set your mind upon the Holy Spirit's peace. It can be hard to stop. It can be hard to stop. You sometimes see people in a workplace that will just work and work and work and work and work because it feels good. It feeds their pride because they've got those gifts, because people recognize it. But God calls us to work really hard to stop working. That's what the striving is. Rely only upon Jesus' sacrifice. I can't make myself right with God. I can't make myself better or acceptable to him. The Old Testament said it was obedience. Obedience to the Lord would sanctify you. The New Testament says it's Jesus' sacrifice. He can make me right with God. That is the striving. Strive to get to Jesus. To get rid of the barriers. Strive to let go of your pride. Strive to spend time with him. Strive to be there with other Christians. That's what the work of coming to the cross is. So we can obey the Father's command. There's some lovely quotes about how kind of the rest is the start of the fight against sin. So when you come to that point of resting, that's when you can fight against sin. You can't fight against sin without God. You can't try to be a better person. You can't try to be kinder, to be more loving. You can only do that after you get to it. This is a quote from this guy, William Gurnall, who I mentioned last time I spoke, who was a rector at Lavenham. So he was a Puritan. He worked in the church there. You can see his name up there on the list. And he said this, "Wrap your weary soul in this promise. There is a place of rest for the people of God. You do not beat the air, but wrestle to win heaven and a permanent crown." And that's doing the work of getting yourself before God. And I love the fact you've got communion. My title was Rest and Remembrance. We're going to have time where you can put yourself right with God. That's the striving. The state of grace is the commencement of your war against sin, not the culmination of it. There will still be a battle to do after you've rested in God. You can rest in Christ, you can receive his goodness. He will give you what you need to fight, but you will be called to keep working. But rest is that key moment. That rest is that moment of accepting what God's done and going on from there in the fight. All we have to do to strive to enter that rest is to believe. Remember in Hebrews it talked about the sin of unbelief. The striving is battling to believe. We do that by remembering who God is. We remember his goodness to us in the past. We remember his promises. Which is why rest and remembrance hold together. When you rest, you remember. When God rested, he remembered his 6 days of creation. When we rest, we remember who God is. We remember who I'm not. I'm nothing. I'm dust. But God is all powerful. We remember his goodness. We remember what he has done through Jesus for us. We remember his promises. Let us hold fast our confession. That passage in Hebrews ends with this phrase, confession. This is what we're called to do. And again, we do it every week through our songs. We do it through our prayers. We do it through the time we spend preparing. But confessing is confessing a number of things. Confessing how weak we are, how sinful we've been. It's confessing who God is. It's knowing who he is. So I think what we'll do for the next few minutes is we'll just focus on those thoughts. We'll have some quiet. I'll then introduce communion. But my encouragement to you is, my exhortation to one another is, to think about who God is. To rest in him. To rest in his promises. If you're struggling with that, if rest is hard to come by, ask God to help you believe. If you're struggling to believe any of his promises, say, God, I want your help. I want to understand who you are. I want to believe in your promises. So in a few minutes, I'll just come back up and then I'll give thanks for communion. And that will also be part of our remembrance and our rest in him.